Hello and welcome to episode 38 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenu.
And this week we are talking to Alex Matthew, aka Maya, the drag queen from Bangalore. Born and raised in an Orthodox Christian home in Kerala, Alex temporarily broke away from his roots to live his life being true to his identity as a queer man and to pursue his passion for the drag community in Bangalore.
In this episode, Alex delves into his past as a child trying to figure out his sexuality and his passions. But get ready to share this episode with all your friends who still don't see the difference between hijras, drag queens, transgenders, and the gay community. So let's jump right into the show.
Welcome to the show, Alex. You're the third Malayali on the show, and that makes me very happy.
Yeah, I'm kind of happy that I'm the third Malayali in this show, and it's an honor because I've read a lot about you guys. I've even heard some of your podcasts as well. I keep telling people that I'm not an original Malayali. I'm actually a fake Malayali. So the reason when people ask me why you're a fake Malayali, I keep telling them that I don't like coconut and I don't like banana chips. So that is something which people always think that all Malayalis should like. And they'd be like, how can you be a Malayali if you don't like coconuts and banana chips? I'm like, there are people out there and one of those people is me.
No, on my blog, Alex, I always write about how I'm a Malu, and one thing I always write about is how I love coconuts and the smell of coconut oil and everything. So yeah, you are quite a deviant from that.
Well, I'm British, Alex, and my parents are Hindu Punjabi. So all the guests we've had so far, barring the Malayalis and two other guests, have all been Punjabi. So I guess Ankita feels quite happy right now.
So I'm just like, you know, for me, I'm like, when I was staying in Kerala, I was actually considered an outsider because my accent was not that great in terms of speaking in Malayalam. Like, they were like, no, you're not hitting the right, the pronunciation is not right. You are like, you sound like a foreigner and all of that. And then I come to Bangalore and then I still have the Malayali accent or the South Indian accent. So it's just this whole, you know, mixed potpourri thing happening, you know.
So during our correspondence, Alex, we told you that we'll be asking you some very stupid questions, partly because of our, I guess, lack of knowledge, and partly because we want you to explain certain core concepts to people who are even my mother's age, my parents' age. And thanks to our parents, we have quite a lot of listeners in India who are from our parents' generation, and we feel that there are some very important concepts and ideas that you need to share with everyone.
Yep. I'm ready to answer, like, just bring it on.
Yeah, and when I told my mom about you and about this interview, especially since you're a fellow Malayali, she was interested and she was asking me all kinds of questions, like, what does it mean to be a drag queen? And she was asking me, is he gay? Is he transgender? So I was like, listen, mom, you have to wait till this episode comes out. And I know that you've answered all these questions on a day-to-day basis and you're probably tired of them too, but this is our one chance to, you know, once and for all, put all the information out there and try to educate everyone, okay? So you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. So the thing is, I keep educating people. Like, I can't get tired because the point is letting them know that I exist and there are people like me who exist. So yeah, I'm all ready for this.
So let's start at the very beginning. You were born into an Orthodox Malayali Christian household. And although I understand perfectly what that means, I'm sure Meenal doesn't fully grasp the severity of how Orthodox it can get in Kerala. So tell us about your upbringing.
So basically, like, it was all about, you know, being this nice Christian boy who gets good grades and get a good job and then get married and then have kids and then, you know,
go to church on Sundays.
Oh yeah, church on Sunday was something which my mother keeps saying that it's some sort of a sin if I don't go to church on Sunday. She keeps saying that you don't go to church, there is something wrong. And I'm like, what if God is here? He's around me. Like, I'm having a conversation with him. Like, why do I have to go to church to talk to him? He can be sitting right next to me and talking. So because of all that strict Christian upbringing, I should keep thinking that being gay, being queer was something which is wrong and it should not be even thought about. Even having the thoughts about it, I'm being very open here. Even for masturbation, I should literally, after masturbating, I used to literally go and pray to God to forgive my sin. So I should do that. So that is how strict I mean my upbringing was. Like, my mom also told me this thing, like, in terms of she made my sister and I sit together, and she told my sister, "You're not bringing a girl at home, and you're not bringing a boy home to me." And I still remember that. And I was like, you know, like, what if, you know, I get like attracted to some guy and it happens, you know, that sort of thing. And that actually happened. Like, in terms of, there were career choices that I wanted to do. Like, in terms of, I told my mother, I want to be a Bharatanatyam dancer. She said, no, you'll turn into being gay. Then after that, I said, I want to be a fashion designer because I was good at drawing and, you know, I was drawing a lot of dresses and sketching women and all that. And she was like, no, you become gay. And I didn't do any of that, and yet I'm gay. So I'm just like, I keep like looking at her, you know, whenever she's like, she just doesn't want to talk about it and all that. At the same time, we had a moment where my mom used to make me see movies such as Sound of Music, My Fair Lady. She opened a new whole door for me because I'm a performer. And she actually made me see this musical, which is very beautiful. And I was so in awe. And that is what I actually wanted to be when I was big. I wanted to be a performer. And that is how it all started.
So almost like the question of which came first, the chicken or the egg, I want to ask you, which aspect of your personality did you realize first? The fact that you were gay or that you wanted to be a drag queen and a performer?
So, you know, me doing drag, I did a shot of it when I was in school. But there was nothing in terms of related to my sexuality when I did drag then. Because I did it because of the fun of it. I went on stage. Ankita, I'm pretty sure you would know about this because there is this movie called as Manichitratar.
Yes.
Where Shobhana acts as this multiple personality disorder kind of person, Nagavalli.
Yep.
So I went for a fancy dress competition dressed as Nagavalli. And I danced and I acted as if I was possessed by Nagavalli.
Wow.
So that actually, like, I've never done fancy dress competition in my life. I went for the first time and I got the first prize for it. So that is like the biggest achievement I've ever like got when I was doing drag, right? So that was my first time with drag. Till then, you know, I just was confused about my sexuality. I thought I'm attracted to men and women, and I'm maybe, you know, I don't know where should I put myself. I kept thinking it was a phase. It was all when I moved to Bangalore for a job. That's when I met a lot of people from the community, and they kind of educated me about my sexuality. And that's when I found out that I'm gay. And that's something which I'm like, you know, I'm quite grateful that I found it at quite an early age and not after I was married and having two kids that I found out that I was gay.
Well, Alex, how and when did you come out to your family?
So right after my first performance in like, you know, first public performance in drag, a month after, like after my birthday and all that, I got the other chance to perform again in drag. And my mother said, no, you are not going to perform in drag again. And that's when I was building an email for 6 months because my parents were not ready to listen to me. So that is when I started writing an email like 6 months before my first drag performance saying that, hey, you know what, I'm gay and I'm going to do drag full time and all that. And that is when I shot the email to them. And it was more like a double-edged sword for them because my mother said, hey, to hell with sexuality, I don't want you to do drag. And my father was like, sexuality is a sin, but drag is okay as long as you're getting paid for it. So it reached the point where I'm like, okay, they're confused. They're not able to make head and tails of it. So we had this ongoing conversation, which was full of fights, which was full of like, you know, we were literally shouting at each other. There was crying happening, everything, all very emotional stuff. And it reached the point where my mother wasn't well for some time. She actually called me up and she asked me, what is drag or what is drag? Who's a drag queen? And then that's when I explained to her saying that a drag queen is basically a person who puts on a man who puts on an act on stage who, you know, performs in a very overtly feminine gender role and it's larger than life and it's basically only on stage. So then she was like, oh, okay, you know, so you don't dress up like this every day. And I said, yeah, I don't dress up like this every day. I only do it for stage. That's all I do. And she was like, oh, okay. Then I said, then, you know, I went on by, you know, trying to convince her, saying that, hey, if I go abroad, I'll get paid a lot and the people will be throwing money at me. Then she's like, why are you here? Just go there. So I was like, okay, that it's not like it's not going to take, like suddenly I happened to go abroad. So that is how I came out to them. And, you know, after some time, they realized that we are hurting each other, and they moved to Bangalore. You know, my dad got a job here. My mother and my grandmother and sister are in the same city. We are not living together, of course, but they are trying to understand what drag is and who I am.
Did you have to break away from church once you came out to your family? Like, are you at all religious at this point?
I believe there is a universal supreme being. I do believe in Jesus Christ because he saved my soul, etc. But when the moment when my parents cut me out after I came out, I had to go back to, like, say, you know, like, find another way to get emotional stability. And I went to Buddhism for a while. And so I keep calling myself as a Christian practicing Buddhist. So because Buddhism doesn't have to, like, be a set, like, you're not going to get converted into Buddhism. You can still still be a Christian and you can still practice Buddhism.
And it's not like you're worshipping any god in particular when it comes to Buddhism. It's about living according to a set of values.
It's just a chant. Because when I came out, I had panic attacks, solid panic attacks, because the solid panic attack is because I felt like I have nobody in my life. You know, it came to that point, and that's when I started chanting, and it kind of, you know, meditation actually brought my, like, soul into peace, and that is what it's good about.
So I see that we've already gone into talking about drag and performances, and this is a time for us to ask you all these stupid questions, Alex. We're very sorry, but if you could just please explain to our listeners, in your own words, exactly what drag is all about.
So drag was started way back in 17th, the slang. It was actually a theater slang that way back in 17th century, where women were not allowed to play women roles in theater. It was all had to be done by men. So it started way back then, and it's evident even in India, and it's still played in India, where various forms like Kathakali, Yakshagana, Theyam are all done by men, mostly. Even women roles are done by men. So a drag queen is basically like a person who dresses up as a woman and goes on stage and gives in these larger-than-life shows for people. Dragging is a woman who dresses up as a man and goes on stage and, you know, gives a fantabulous kind of performance, plays this whole, like, I know a dragging who is based out of Mumbai, who played Shami Kapoor really well. So I was, like, quite astounded by, oh my god, this is like larger than life. Shami Kapoor is no longer in this world, but you get to see a person playing Shami Kapoor. So that is something which is very great about drag, because drag is about being a shapeshifter. I can be as Maya the drag queen. I can be a widow one day. I can be dressed as a Madhuri Dixit item girl another day. And I could be a glamorous auntie the next day. So that is the beauty of drag, that you keep shifting identities or shifting images. So, yeah.
And you dress up as a woman every time you go on the stage as Maya. You sing, you dance, you address your audience as kutis and kutins, but you're not transgender. So please explain to my mom the difference between being a drag queen and king and being transgender.
Yeah, so I'll speak to Auntie. Auntie, I'm telling you, like, a drag queen is just a person, like, there's nothing. So to make it simplify for you, drag is what I do and sexuality is what I am. So, like, Auntie, if you understand what I'm saying, is drag is what I do, matlab, like, you know, I go on stage and I perform. And that's about it. Sexuality is me, like, in terms of who I'm attracted to sexually. So I'm not a transgender. I'm actually a boy who dresses up as a woman and going on stage. So yeah, that is the difference.
So Alex, you mentioned that you're gay as a person, but is it necessary mm-hmm. for a drag queen to be a gay man? Can straight men be drag queens too?
Of course, straight men can do drag. Like a best example is Dame Edna. So Dame Edna has kind of influenced me also in a way, because when he started talking to people, he said, "My dear possums." And that is where I took the idea of My Dear Possums and I made it into Enter Kutties and Kuttens, where I address all my people who love me that they are my children. So yeah, that is how the reference I got from Enter Kutties and Kuttens. Yeah.
And what is the difference between cross-dressing and drag?
Cross-dressing is basically people who want to wear the opposite sex clothing on a day-to-day basis, and drag is just for that particular night. You're putting on a show and you are actually going on stage as a larger-than-life character.
Right, so the last bit of technicality here, Alex. People get this wrong way too often, and we really didn't want to ignore this, but what are the prepositions associated with the queens? Like, while she, you know, people say she is performing and he's performing. So what can you say? Can you tell us a bit about that?
So the thing is, when drag queens go on stage, it's always she, her, you know, and for drag kings, it's he, him. While if there are some gender confirming or gender neutral people, they are known as they, them, their. So for example, for me, my pronouns are usually like, if I go on stage, it's he, she, Maya. Then for me, when I'm out of drag, it's he, him, Alex. So that's how it goes.
Okay. And you have two drag daughters. So can you explain the whole concept of drag daughters and what it means and what you do for them? What kind of support you offer to them?
So basically, like this drag daughter, it started way back in, like when drag was started in US, way up there, they had houses of La Beja. So if you go back to like a documentary known as Paris is Burning, there's House of La Beja, House of Estragaganza. So all of them had a mother and then the daughter. Now, it's very similar to how the Hijra culture is in India, where there is the guru and then the chelas. So basically what I'm doing right here is that I'm a drag mother and I am giving like whatever directions that my daughters need in order to achieve their career. And that is what I, and whatever support that they need to like go into the world. There was nobody, you know, who was guiding me. I mean, I actually have a drag mother, but he's based out of Boston. But, that's what I do.
So you didn't have a support system when you first got into the field?
When I got in, as in terms of first, I had friends helping me out, but there was nobody as a drag mother. Unless I caught the eye of my drag mother, that is, her name is Lahore Wajistan. She actually saw me perform and she was like, "You have to be my drag daughter." And she actually changed my life, because till then I was just singing, acting, you know, dancing like one pageant queen. But she told me, "Hey, you know what? I think you should include storytelling into your performance. And it will make a difference." And that is what exactly changed my whole life.
So Alex, how does someone go out and find a drag mother or a support system?
They reach out to me, basically. Like, you know, they say, talk about that they wanted to drag. And then I keep mentoring them, saying that, do you know a name, drag name? Do you have a drag background story about it, about the character? And let's just do it. Like, I will introduce you for one of my performances.
Right. And we spoke about your childhood, your upbringing, and I kind of feel like we interrogated you about all these technicalities and concepts. But now let's get into another phase of every child's life that shapes them, which is education. Can you tell us what your schooling was like?
Oh, my schooling. Yeah, that is one of those phases that I just sort of forget, because it was not that great for me, because there were all these close schoolmates of mine who actually used to call me, "You walk like a lady, tease me, bully me." it reached a point where I think it was a turning point when I did drag in school, and that for fancy dress competition, where I finally understood who I am, you know, who I really am. I mean, in terms of that, I'm comfortable doing this in this form, like being comfortable with my feminine side. But then, you know, it just died down because my parents didn't encourage me after that. So that is when I was just confused about myself, you know, in college and in my post-graduation and, you know, my initial working days. So, yeah.
And what did you study in college?
I did my BCom and then I did my MBA.
And Alex, how old are you now?
I'm 28, going to be 29 in October.
Oh, okay. So we're going back way back into the years now about your school days. But
yeah.
you just did mention, I hope you remember quite a lot so you can answer this question. But you said that you were quite feminine from a young age, and you said that people mocked you for the way you walked. And even today, from what I've read and from what I've heard from Ankita as well, Kerala and most states in India are not very accepting of all gender binaries. So 10 to 15 years ago... Yeah, so 10 to 15 years ago when you were a developing boy, and obviously at that stage, you weren't very clear with your ideas. You were still trying to find answers and figure out who you were.
Exactly.
I don't imagine that the people surrounding you, not just your classmates, but even your teachers, probably gave you some good support. And I can understand kids bullying you, but did teachers ever be part of this bullying when they made comments? And
actually, teachers are more like, you know, those... the typical notion saying that man up and don't be so sensitive, because there were times when I used to cry for something or the other, and that's because it hurt me. And yeah, I am sensitive, I know that, but they were not one of those like, let me try to understand the boy and what the boy is going through. No, they were just basically in that whole running race to finish their portions and go, you know, let's just, you know, that sort of thing. They were not ready to understand the kid, understand the what the boy is going through. No, it is just about studies, and that's something which is a big flaw in the Indian education system, when it's all about studies and it's not about how the person's INT is and all that.
And speaking of flaws in the education system, this is story time now, Alex. I'm going to tell you a story.
Yay!
So when I was doing my master's in English literature, which was around 5 years ago, one of my teachers openly came out and remarked that there's no such thing as gay. Boys are just confused. Nothing a little bit of counseling cannot fix. And this turned into a big debate with me and my friends on one side arguing with this teacher, who said that being gay is unnatural, otherwise gay people would have been able to procreate, and the concept of being gay does not exist in the animal kingdom, it's against the Bible, because of course everyone wants to fall back on the scriptures when they don't they feel like they're losing an argument. And at that point I felt angry at this ignorance. You know how everyone says that English literature, or any literature for that matter, is a field that teaches you to have an open mind and it broadens your horizons? I could not see that. I could not see that here. And now that I distanced myself from that incident, I can see plainly that the argument stemmed from ignorance and blind faith. But it's still very disconcerting that teachers who have so much influence over young minds think it's okay to openly spread this kind of hate. So if you were in that class as a gay student who hadn't come out to the world yet, how would you have felt? How would you have reacted? What effect would this have had on you?
You know, I'm kind of grateful that I'm kind of Christian as well, because whoever brings out Bible to me and say that homosexuality is illegal, then the next question I ask them is, do you eat pork? Do you wear fabric which is worn of, I mean, sorry, or do you wear clothes which is worn of two fabrics? If those answers are yes, then you should not equate saying that homosexuality is illegal, because right now what you're doing is taking out scriptures and just taking it just for your liking or whoever, whatever you feel like. Tell me, like, in that Bible, it's even written that you're not supposed to, like, divorce your partner, whoever is you're dating or whatever. So it's kind of hypocrisy in a different way. So I would definitely tell this to the teacher. I will definitely ask the first question I'll ask is, do you eat pork? Because I'm pretty sure that teacher would have eaten pork at some point of the time. So that actually, like, tells everything about, like, you know, if you're being a hypocrite or not.
Yeah, and this college experience that I told you about, it happened in an all-girls college, Alex. And I refuse to believe that of the hundreds of girls who studied at the institution, there weren't any lesbians. You know, although not even a single girl from my class was openly gay, but I refuse to believe that when more than 100 girls get together, there can't be even one lesbian in there. They just don't have the freedom to come out and express themselves because there are people who bully them in such a way.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, people are not ready to open up. Like, see, like, Kerala is now opening up to transgenders, but they won't be open towards gay men or towards lesbian women. And right now, it's reached a point where there's a lot of things, something called as the marriage of convenience, where because society is not ready to accept them to who they are, gay men get married to lesbian, but they still have, like, you know, their boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. So I've taken a choice that I won't get married to a girl just because I need to hide it from the society that I'm a gay man, that I have to hide it from the society. I'm sorry, fuck the society. I am who I am. So yeah.
Because I have also heard, you know, along the same lines of what you just said, I've heard so many times in really conservative societies in areas like Kannur and other places, boys, they go off to college and they're gay and they know that they're gay, but their families want them to marry young girls. And sometimes these young girls are as young as 18 or 19 years old. And
they're clueless. They're clueless about all of this. And they are expected the man to be faithful to them, but it's not the case. They will definitely have some affairs or the other. And I've heard, you know, the thing is, when I came out, there was a case in Bangalore where the wife caught the husband having sex with men, and he was slapped. Section 377. I literally went to my parents and said, "So, do you want me to get married and end up like him?" Like that question, I put that across to them, and they were like, "No, you don't have to get married."
It's something to think about, right? Because in many of these cases, some of the naive girls, like girls get married at a very young age, and usually there's no conversation around sex in the house, and there's pressure to produce children, and they ultimately probably just have sex for the sake of having kids. And imagine this girl who doesn't have any idea what's going on and her first sexual encounter, because obviously she is a virgin when she gets married, is with a gay man who is really not interested in her. It's just wrong on so many levels.
And also, this is just the thing, right? Like, you know, one of my aunts told me, "Oh, so when are you getting married?" So I said, "Why should I get married?" He said, "No, we have to attend a really big function and celebrate, right?" And I'm like, I can throw a coming out party and that would be enough. That would be great enough.
That's wonderful.
Function. Right. Why do I have to have a function where I'm... And then my mom says stuff like this. Okay, she's very like... So one of my cousins got conceived. I mean, like, hasn't he... He was expecting a baby. And the other brother was not expecting. Because he's his elder brother and they were not expecting. So I told my mother, "Oh, so he must be focused on his career and doesn't want a baby right now." And my mother was like, "No, every marriage you have to procreate." And I'm like, really?
Wow.
Like, why do you need to procreate to have a marriage? Like, you know, so she's like, "No, you have to like bring forth like children to this world." And I'm like, please, do you even, like, you know, when I told her that, do you even hear what you're saying? And that was when she got pissed and she increased the TV volume. So I was like, okay, to have a conversation with her is like in a different level altogether.
Well, this all stems from the same problem, right, Alex? We were talking about education, and your parents received a certain education. I received probably a different sort of education, which probably you can't even imagine because I live in Europe. So I think that if we go back to speaking about education, and the real meaning of education is not just learning your math formulas and learning your English sentences and learning your scientific facts. This is also a form of education which is not put out in schools, and not just in India, even here in Europe as well. There are some schools which don't openly talk about these things. So what kind of message would you like to put out for any teachers out there who may be even listening right now?
I still think that they should actually try to talk about the different identities in the world. Like, in terms of in India, the trans, I'm talking just about the trans identities, are so diverse and so different compared to the Western trans identity. So they have to sensitize children about, you know, like about sexuality, because it's about how they figure out who they are themselves. Like, you know, if I hadn't experimented with Simira, with men and women, that's how I figured out that I'm gay, that I am this, and this is who I am, and this is what I am comfortable being with. The moment you like force somebody to do something which you think that person is, it's kind of wrong in, like how Ankita said, is wrong in so many levels. So like in terms of the biggest example that I did like last year was when I went to a school where a child, actually there was a dress up day or something, and the child, the boy child, came dressed up in a sari, and there were a lot of people making fun of him. Now what the teachers did was, the teachers actually called me in, said that you are going to come in, you're going to perform, and you're going to educate the children about who you are. And can you imagine, like, you know, they asked me questions, oh my God, how do you wear that sari so well, to are you a transgender? Why are you wearing that wig? Take it off. They were actually like, usually when I perform, everybody is interested to see Maya and not interested to see Alex. But here in the school, they actually treated Alex as a celebrity, because they were like, who is this guy who is making this persona come alive on stage? So it is very important for teachers to actually educate students about sexuality in the world. And it's not like sexuality just cropped up one freaking day. It has been there for centuries altogether. If you do research, you will find it out as well.
Well, I also think, Alex, that apart from just teachers explaining to kids in class and everything, I think one big tool is textbooks. You know, when we're doing maths problems or we're solving problems, you know, they say like, Roger went and bought 5 apples. You know, that kind of thing. Like everyone, we've read before that people have said that, you know, they're very specific to male names and it's very masculine based. So apart from that, I think that we should be introducing literature which openly talks about these things, because if you have children reading about these things in schools, and they will think, actually, you know what? It's not a sin for me to be this way. People are actually like this as well. And I think that's another big tool, because books are everywhere and books is a great tool to educate people. So I think this is one thing that could also help.
Yeah, and also in US, they've started this whole, libraries have started this whole initiative where they hire a drag queen to come and read books, and those are gender neutral books to children. So that is like an amazing idea that I see happening in US, which is like, you know, teaching the children that, hey, there is this person who's dressed up as a woman, but at the same time reading a book, you know, which is gender neutral, and that is so amazing. And there are parents to take children to these, you know, like these sessions and these classes. I mean, it's very important. Like, so I'm totally agreeing with you about the literature part.
It's all about normalizing in the end, make everything normal for kids.
Also, I keep telling people that they should just remove the words normal and abnormal. Like, because what is normal to me won't be normal to you, and what is normal to you won't be normal to me. So I think it should just, because it's all about perception, and people just should be like, you know, just try making it neutral, because that's something which people are not ready to even accept other people as humans. Like, you can see what the stuff are happening all around this world. They don't see the other person as a human being. It's just everything about race, religion, everything comes into a color of the skin comes into play. So it's high time that we start looking into each other as human beings. So
No, along the same lines of normal, you know, not having the having the words normal and abnormal in the vocabulary, it's the same concept with morals as well, I feel, where what is moral to me may not be moral to you. What is moral in one country may be immoral in another country. So it all makes so much sense.
Exactly.
Now, you're currently working as a communications officer at Solidarity Foundation, right?
Yep.
And we know that you love it there. So what does your job entail?
So what we do in Solidarity Foundation is we deal with better livelihoods for sex workers and the LGBT community. So we give them like ways to find out how they can live in the society where the society is actually deeming them to say that they can only do things like begging and only sex work. So that's not true. So we find ways for them to live and find ways how they can live properly in a society, like to giving them research projects, giving them things to like sustain, you know, giving them fellowships, trying to sensitize gender, like, you know, like of gender and sexuality in corporate. We had a recent project which is about giving jobs to the LGBT community, like, you know, so that they all can sustain. They don't have to go through violence that they have to go through every single day. So, yeah, I like it because it's a way, it's like me giving back to the community. Like, I'm using my skills to make them, you know, understand that, hey, I know what you're going through, but I'm here to help you out. So, yeah.
And it's clear that where you're working, it's probably the most sex positive and most accepting workplace. But I'm curious to know if you've ever held a job where you were discriminated against for doing drag on the side or for just being gay.
Okay, so I have to tell you this, that my boss is currently working. I'm currently working with her. She actually was one of my first bosses who came and watched me perform on stage as in a drag queen. So you try catching any boss who does that. Yes, I've been discriminated. I've lost a couple of jobs because of not because that I do drag, because they assume that me being gay is being equivalent to being effeminate and that I'm not suited for the job. There was another NGO where I don't want to take the name, where they made that assumption that basically because I'm gay, it's just a marketing sort of recruiting sort of a job. See, they assume that I'll get hurt if I go to colleges to recruit students for that NGO.
It's crazy.
And that is total bullshit. That is total bullshit. Like, you know, so for me, it is learning lessons, you know. It's like saying that you should never, never, ever suppress your identity just for a job. You should never do that. You should just, if the job is not ready to, like, there's plenty of other jobs who is ready to accept you for the way you are. And I'm having that job actually, and I'm happy. Like by this month, I'll complete a year with Solidarity Foundation, and that's brilliant actually.
Well, recently, when the Kochi Metro was launched, it garnered attention for becoming the first metro to have an on-station transgender staff. I don't know if you heard about this, Alex, but. Yeah, so within just the first week, 9 of the appointed staff had to quit because of there was reported mistreatment by fellow workers and their inability to even find just accommodation in a society where people were not so accepting of their sexuality. Right. And it was very sad to hear that. And on our blog, feminismindia.com, one of our writers, Parthiv Kidambur, he extensively wrote about this topic. And in the end, he discusses the social cost of progressiveness in our country, and especially in your home state of Kerala, is very, very high. And this article was very interesting because it struck a chord with me. And, you know, for years you see things like Swachh Bharat, and you see that people are trying to bring new policies and are trying to get communities together. It works for a month. Mm-hmm. It works for a couple of weeks, maybe even a year or 2 years. But what happens after that? You know, no amount of new policies by the government can help minority communities as long as the social stigma still lies in the air.
And what makes
things worse is that even well-educated young adults from our generation are, unfortunately, they are still backward in their thinking. And you've mentioned all your experiences, and you seem to have had your fair share with these kinds of young people who don't understand what you do and don't understand your sexuality and the person you are. So recently, a young straight man told you that he doesn't accept what you do as Maya and accused you of being a gay man acting straight. Like, what does that even mean?
No, the thing is, whenever somebody is making an accusation of me like this, they don't know me really well. They don't care about what I do on the society, I mean, in society. In terms of, the point of why I'm doing drag is because I see a lot of young gay people out there. So they are, they look up to me, and they see that there is a person who's being very, like, you know, open about themselves, and who's ready to, like, fight for anything, any sort of discrimination. And that is exactly who I am. In terms of people, I don't know where you got that about people looking at me and saying that I'm putting out a facade of playing it as a gay man, but I know who I am, and I know a lot of people who know me as well. So, It's actually like really, you know, very, like in a way it hurts me a bit, but in the, at the same time, it's a way to say then move on. And this, whoever this person is, I can't deal with their nonsense. So yeah.
So I don't want you to feel hurt by these questions, Alex, but I think it's important for everyone to know the kind of bias that
I'm
you've
been...
No,
I'm not hurt at all, but this is the way I deal with people, you know, whoever, you know, tells me stuff about that, you know, what you're doing is not drag or whatever, what you're doing is not being gay enough or whatever you're doing is, I'm not accepting it. Like, in, I just give it back to them. I'm sorry, I don't need, you're not paying my bill, so I don't need a medal from you. Saying that this is, oh my God, good boy, you got a medal. No, I'm sorry. I'm not looking for a medal. I'm only looking for people to say, oh my God, that person is inspiring and he's actually stood his ground on his what he thinks about drag and what he thinks about his sexuality. So yeah.
And another person said that he would date a drag queen as long as the drag queen or he wouldn't hurt him. I just don't understand. Why do people feel so threatened? What is so threatening about a drag queen?
It's messed up. Like in terms of INTs, the thing drag means, you know, like from the Hijra community or from the Hijra culture, which is not right. I mean, there would be somebody from the Hijra community who's ready to play as a drag queen, which is totally fine. But, you know, equating harm with the community in terms of drag or the Hijra community is total bullshit. So whenever I saw that and I was like, dude, like that's when I made this song called as Drag Queens. It's called as the Cheap Thrills version by Sia.
I heard that.
I'm using
I heard
that version. Yeah, so I used that version and I made a drag queen. So yeah.
And another straight man said that he would totally sleep with you as Maya, but not as Alex. And I don't really get that because how would sleeping with Maya work out for a straight man? What could possibly be his expectation from that?
So the thing is, cross-dressing is sexualized in the Indian society. So if they see you as a beautiful woman, it's more like this whole thing of saying that, oh, I'm sleeping with a woman or the idea of the woman. So it is fine. It's totally fine sleeping with a guy who dresses up as a woman.
What is the expectation from an experience of sleeping with you as Maya?
I mean, because I'm serving the illusion, right? I'm serving the illusion as a woman. They won't be able to get this anywhere else. So I'm a gorgeous woman in her 30s and they won't get somebody like this. Do you think they would be able to do this with a woman? They won't be easily be able to do this. But, you know, I'm standing my ground. Like, there are so many people. I have messages in Maya's fan page or Facebook page where men think that they're privileged enough to ask my WhatsApp number. I'm like, why should I give you a number? Just like that, I want to know you. I want to keep in touch with you. I say, you can keep in touch with me through here. Then also give me the number. It feels like they own me or they feel privileged in order to ask me the number.
You know what, Alex? That is actually what comes with being a woman because I get asked my WhatsApp number all the time and Meenal does too. Just because that's why if you're a woman and you look like a woman, you have boobs, you have a vagina, everyone thinks, okay, let's just go up to them and ask for their number and ask them to send us pictures.
Like, you know, can you imagine, like, you know, and then next thing, like I have suddenly somebody send me like one of those gifs where there's like some guy is throwing his dick around, something like that. And I'm like, God, like, I didn't bother to reply. I was like, I ignore it. I'm like, yeah, this is what everybody gets. Like, you know, like there are times when somebody send me a dick picture and I'm like I will definitely get back to you after I judge it along with my friend. That's how I reply back.
And to this person who asked you if you would sleep with him and you said that I will sleep with you as Alex and not as Maya.
Yeah.
If he agreed to sleep with you as Alex, what would you have actually slept with him?
I would have, but I would have maybe met him in public for the first time because I don't want to sleep with creeps. Because people that I meet in these places are usually creeps, okay? So there's not like one genuine guy. I think up until recently, like yesterday, there was one guy I chatted in Instagram and he seemed sorted and he's gay also. So he and I, we went on like a date. We talked and there was nothing sexual about it. We just talked and we got to know each other and that was it. And that is, I'm all up for that, you know, I'm all up for that. But, you know, sexualizing drag, that's something which is very, like, I've never done it. I don't think I'll ever do it.
And you've been openly gay since 2014. And I saw some, I saw a photo shoot where you dressed up as a bride and there was a wedding scenario happening. So do you have a boyfriend? Was that your boyfriend?
No. That guy was a straight guy, by the way. So this is just a bridal photo shoot. And the whole team was filled with straight people. So I'm so honored that there was people who are straight who were ready to help to make such a photo shoot happen. Because I was kind of like, you know, should I contact people, you know, for this photo shoot, like a guy to pose with me as my husband and all that. And you won't find a gay man to do that. I would have never found a gay man to do this. But I happened to find a straight guy who said that, I was like, are you okay with it? And he's like, let's just do it, man. I don't care. And he was a brilliant, like, a model, you know. He actually acted as if we are like the soulmates. Like, we are just staring at each other. We're going to, like, get married after a long time of courtship and all that.
He had me fooled. I thought he was your boyfriend.
Yeah, see, that's the beauty of it, right?
Yeah.
The photo shoot was so beautiful. The people think that I'm married to him, actually. But, you know, the thing is that I built the background story such a way that Maya is living with her boyfriend or her husband now, known as Anand Raja. And that whole photo shoot was revolving around that story.
Right.
And if you're asking me why the reason I did it was because in a community like in the Indian society where people are so scared to even get married, I was like, it's okay to go and embrace and another person and be with that person, even if it doesn't have to involve the typical marriage ritual where you go to a temple and you exchange garlands and the priest says that you are man and man or wife and wife or whatever. But you know, that whole idea, people are not ready to even dream about the idea. And that's really horrible, right? Because I want people to think about that. You know, you will definitely have a future partner and you should be happy with that person. So that is what I wanted to do through that photo shoot.
And again, Alex, people ask you when you're planning on getting a surgery to turn into a woman. And I just can't even imagine how frustrating that must be. But you seem to be quite witty and when you give your responses. So do you have a good response to this kind of question?
I keep saying that I like what God gifted me. And
okay.
like, I'm never going to chop it off because God has gifted me a really good one. So I'm not going to chop it off. I mean,
okay.
I respect all the people are going to transition, but I don't see myself. I see myself as a man.
You live in Bangalore, Alex, and it's a...
Yep.
I would say it's probably one of the most progressive parts of our country in India. And
yeah,
I mean, you can tell us, are people there truly as accepting as they're said to be?
Yes, they are. Compared to other places in India, Bangalore is one of the cities which is very open to the queer community. And it's one of the cities that actually opened to the whole idea of me doing in drag. I mean, me performing in drag. So, yeah, that is what this city was about. Because I've been in cities such as Cochin, Trivandrum, Hyderabad, you know, lived there for a good amount of years. And I feel I'm better in a city like Bangalore.
And Alex, a lot of our listeners may not be from India. And just earlier in this discussion, we were talking about all the different sort of names we have for different types of sexualities. You know, we have drag queen, we have gay, lesbian, and we also have the hijra community. And mm-hmm. This is a very sort of special thing that we have in India. So could you please just explain to our listeners who are not in India what the hijra community is all about?
So hijra community basically comprises of trans women or women who go through, I mean, men who want to become women. They feel they are, you know, they're trapped inside the wrong body. What happens is because they are part of the working class, so they're not like well-to-do family, they have to go through a nirvana process and they have to go through castration process. And they have literally like houses, like how I told that how in West they have houses. They have something called as the hammam, where the guru is the one person who takes care of all the children. And she helps them, you know, in process of transitioning into a woman. And the thing what the hijra culture is about, it is very old. It's been there since the Mughal times. And people now, because they have been ostracized a lot, they have only two choices, either to beg or to do sex work. Now, what I do usually when I meet them in the road, I actually give them whatever I have, and I treat them like a human being, because people tend not to treat them as human beings. So the moment you try to treat them like, if you, I mean, in the West, trans women are treated with dignity. They're treated with like, I mean, there are places where they're treated like, you know, with violence, and they've been, you know, beaten around. But here, the violence is not just with the society, but it's within the community as well. So like, gay men are not ready to accept hijras as part of their community. They always feel ostracized within the community.
And Alex, I just had a discussion with my mom the other day about the hijra community, because I was speaking about you and I was trying to explain exactly who you are. And she was like, yep, so he's part of the hijra community. And I'm like, mom, he's not. He's completely different. So I explained everything to her. And out of my own curiosity, I asked her, I said, my mom, and I said, what do you think of the hijra community? Because my mom is also very traditional. And mm-hmm. she told me that she loves them. She thinks that they're full of love and full of joy, and they bring happiness into homes. And she explained how in her hometown in Delhi, in her community, in her sort of neighborhood, there's a community of hijra people who go to people's houses when children are born. And she yep. told me that she met up with some hijras who she knew from like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and they're still doing the mm-hmm. same thing. And they went up to my mom and they said, oh, how are you? You know, it's been a long time. And I was very happy to hear that, because my mom accepted that sort of idea of hijras and them being part of our society. But mm-hmm. then it sort of came to me that that is fine. But what happens if one day my brother or even myself came up to her and said, you know, mom, I'm gay or I'm lesbian. Would she still have that sort of same reaction and still be part of that community and understand that, you know, that's who we are? So I think that for many people in India, or maybe people outside of India, it's okay to accept the hijra community from the backseat. But then if it's mm-hmm. someone from their own family, I think that would be a whole different scenario.
Yeah, this is the same thing with what happened with my my mother, right? Like, in terms of, she was okay with seeing Robin Williams and Tati Chatterjee's Kamala Hassan dressed up in drag. But when it came up to like her own son performing, she was not okay with it.
And you said that the hijra community, they're mainly transgender, you know, and they live together. But do you think that there are also cross-dressers and even drag queens in there who just don't have a platform?
Yeah, there are people who are not given the proper platform. Like, see, now in US, there's RuPaul's Drag Race, where they're given a proper platform to, you know, showcase their talent. Now, there's nothing like that in India. So I hope that someday when I'm turned 50 at least, that I have a reality show where I bring in drag queens in India and make them perform.
Alex, I just want to go back to your family dynamics at this stage. And you said that your family didn't understand the concept and didn't understand why you had these specific choices, especially coming from such a strict and orthodox background. And later you moved away to Bangalore to pursue both your career as well as your dream of performing as a drag queen. And there was a time mm-hmm. when your communication with your family resulted in more of a heartbreak for all the parties involved, and then your family moved to Bangalore in order to try and have a relationship with you right now. Mm-hmm. So if you can just tell us, how are things coming along right now?
Yeah. So there was a point of time where my mom would just shout at me through a call, and she's just say that it was wrong and all of that. But now it's reached a point where she's packing my saris, my makeup, and my hair and all of that. You know, I asked her to help me, of course, saying that, hey, you know, I'm going for a shoot, so why don't you help me pack? And she's like, she looks at the saris and she goes like, I know where all the money is going now. And she's helping me pack all the stuff in the suitcase. So it's reached that point. They haven't come and seen me perform as yet, though. But I hope in the future that they do. But yeah, it's reached a point where she's helping me out. And she always gives me these pointers where, oh, this look was, the lipstick was too bright. And this is nice eyes. And this is looking like very beautiful. And then she had this whole gleam in her eye when I said that, do you have any actresses, Bollywood actresses that I should recreate? And she was like, Eureka. And I was like, okay. So she was like, when she was in college, she used to basically have posters of Rekha in her cupboard, and she was a diehard fan of Rekha. So she wants me to like recreate Rekha at some point. So let's see.
My mom is also a diehard fan of Rekha.
She loves her. Whenever she sees a movie of Rekha coming up, she just sits there watching. She's like, she doesn't care. She just wants Eureka. So, yeah.
And you've mentioned how it is your biggest dream, right? For your parents to sit in the audience and watch you perform.
Yep.
How close do you think you are to getting there? Like, how are you? Do you think they'll come this year?
I'm not sure because I tried my level best last year and they just started making excuses. So right now, I'm just not putting the effort. I think they should, like, I can bring the horse to the water, but it's up for the horse to drink the water or not. So right now I've just reached a point where I'm like just being like, okay, I'm doing this and just keeping them informed, and that's about it.
And for your first performance, you said you wore a cheap wig and you wore your mom's sari and danced to Kajrare.
Yeah.
Was your mother aware that you were performing in her sari?
Yes, she was. She was, because I kind of told her the idea about me performing in drag. And she just told me, like, you know, that's a dumb answer, saying that, why can't you make a girl do it? And I'm like, that's not the point. So that's when I kept pestering her to get her sari and her blouse. And that's it. And she knew. And she, you know, after seeing that picture, she kind of said that, oh, now I have two daughters. And I was just laughing. I was like, yeah, right. Okay, thanks for saying that.
But was there any significance to dressing in her sari for your very first performance? Did you make a conscious choice, or was that just out of sheer convenience because it was easily available?
It was easily available, A. And plus, I, you know, because of that, I was able to include whatever my mom is. So if you see Maya right now, she's a lot like my mom. She's a lot like my mother, my grandmother, my aunts, and my family. So I consciously took an effort to, like, embody all those, you know, the characteristics of my, you know, relatives and my mom, actually.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so I watched your TEDx talk and you spoke about how performing on stage as Maya gives you a big adrenaline rush. And when you speak about this adrenaline rush, Alex, what exactly goes through your body and your mind when this happens? And do you think you can find the same feeling and buzz through anything else?
So basically, it's that excitement that I'm going on stage and I'm building this character which nobody has seen before. It's what I always long for. Like me going on stage in theater, like I was performing before in theater, I was longing for that rush, but I was not getting it because I was not feeling the character. Or you were giving me some character which is a misfit. But when I created my own character, spin-off of my own, where people were thinking that, oh, your accent is horrible, so I'll have to work with your diction for 6 months. Oh, you have this feminine quality, so you can't play this guy role really well. But I did this whole character that I created, and it's so beautiful that, you know, I get this whole excitement. My excitement level goes, like, really high. And that's the beauty of it, you know, when I go on stage. So, yeah.
And do you have a sort of preparation routine before you go on stage?
Yeah, so I make a set list. What songs that I have to sing. And what is the storyline behind it? Mm. And I pick out the costumes that I have to wear, and the makeup and the wig and all that is all been properly ironed and properly put together in the bag. And that's how I prepare myself mentally as well, so to get into the character. So the moment I put on my wig and my makeup is on and I'm on in my sari, I am Maya. So I've arrived.
And throughout your life, Alex, as far as I can see, you've been incredibly courageous to break out of a rigorous system that doesn't even try to understand you, and leaving that system and making a life for yourself outside. It all takes so much guts. And you did it. You made a name for yourself in your field, and you did it with a lot of grace and, most importantly, positivity. And you've expanded this courage and this drive to other areas of your life and career as well. For example, in announcing that you would like to host your own talk show, Chaya Vich Maya, which means tea with Maya. You know, I really liked that spin on Coffee with Karan there. Well done.
You know, I kind of said that, you know, if he's not ready to come out of the closet, which is an open secret, I might as well embrace other people who are ready to accept the way they are. So that is why I said the Chaya with Maya. And, you know, I want to bring in people who don't have to be celebrities, but, you know, they are brave souls like me and who are ready to talk about their stories. So, yeah.
So, Alex, your voice is beautiful, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing when I first heard your voice. And is this something that you trained for as a child, or is this something that you did as you were performing drag and you practiced on?
So you mean like my singing voice or my talking voice?
Well, both are as beautiful as each other.
but you sing really well.
I'm talking specifically about your singing voice.
So, in terms of this is my voice that I'm talking to you. This is my voice that I talk to anybody and everybody. But in terms of, singing, I had to go through a lot of, trials and tribulations to get to what I am now. Because in terms of when I did, Glee, right? Glee was really like a rage back then when I saw it first, way back when I was in MBA. And there was like people, I saw this whole video of Lea Michele singing Don't Rain on My Parade. And I was like, hey, I need to sing the song. And I went ahead and recorded the song. And way back, my voice was not that great. And I can pull the same credit to that. That was not that great. And I happened to record this YouTube video. Now, what happened was my brilliant classmates, MBA classmates, actually saw the video, happened to see the video, and they projected it on a screen. And they made fun of me. Now, I could have easily taken that as a thing saying that, hey, I won't sing again and all that. But I didn't. I actually took it as a challenge, and I actually made sure that my singing is better. And right now, I'm going for vocal training classes, and I can see the improvement. Like every class that I go, I can see the notes that I couldn't hit, I'm hitting now. That's something which is brilliant.
So, Alex, on the one hand, I see that you are performing as Maya on stage, breaking gender boundaries, trying to educate people about all the different types of people out there and all the choices an individual is entitled to make. But on the other hand, a more powerful medium of popular culture and movies sometimes manages to undo your work by the way in which it represents minorities. Over the years, transgenders and gays have been used solely for the purpose of comic relief in Indian cinema, and they're essentially dehumanized there. And drag as an art form has received representation only when manly men dress up as women and they were doing things for a higher purpose or for a noble cause, like Kamal Haasan and Chachi Chausobees or Maya Mohini in Malayalam cinema from recent times. So how long do you think it'll take before drag gets represented as an actual art form in pop culture in India?
It's going to take time. It has the same amount of time RuPaul took to create a name for herself in Hollywood and in terms of getting a reality show done, where she gave up towards the end. Can you imagine? She gave up towards the end saying that it'll never be mainstream. And look where Drag Race is being featured in VH1. So I'm keeping the hope that even if I become an old haggard woman or old haggard grandmother, I'm definitely going to see this point where it's going to be represented in movies. There's going to be a show about drag queens, and I'm getting there. I know I'll get there that one day, but I will get there.
And Alex, is there any specific movement in India or any action being taken in the right direction towards making this sort of thing happen? And I'm talking specifically about drag queens. I know there are a lot of movements for other communities, but specifically for drag queens, is anything happening in India right now?
So basically, I'm the only pioneer person who was trying to make drag as a performance art. There are other drag queens as well that are slowly coming out, and I'm glad they're doing their bit. But there is talk that I can actually host a sort of a drag pageant sort of a thing. But it's not coming to being as yet. We are still in talks with the channel and, all that. So let's see, we will get there someday.
Have you watched the show Transparent?
No, I haven't. I need to watch it, actually. I've not watched it as yet.
For any of our listeners who don't know what it's about a dysfunctional Jewish family comprising of a divorced mom and dad and their three grown children who are all really messed up, and how this family devolves into even more chaos after the father comes out and reveals that he's a transgender. And through flashbacks and current day scenarios, they reveal his journey of finally becoming his true self at the age of 70. So most of her adult life was basically a lie, a complete lie. And in one of the flashback scenarios, this father goes to a cross-dressing camp where all these men are free to dress as they please. But he ends up getting discriminated against over there because he was not just a cross-dresser, he was not just a drag queen, he was in fact transgender. transgender and genuinely wanted to become a woman someday. So somehow the show made it clear that even within minority communities, and this it's supposed to have happened back in the 70s or 80s, and even back then within minority communities, there's internal politics and discrimination that's happening. Now, you're an insider in India, so could you tell me if that's true? Do you think drag queens and cross-dressers kind of look down on transgenders in any way?
So I can only speak for myself, but so I would say that I don't look down on them because I see them, their struggles are the same with what I went through. So I treat them the same way. Now, the same thing would be how women are treated, like women are looked down upon by drag queens and trans people in the West. I also include women in my whole act and into my whole thing that, you know, you are my child as well. Like, I'm not only including only gay men. I'm not putting that sort of a thing. So it's always inclusivity, and I believe in that. So that is what I always look forward to.
So finally, Alex, this is our last question for today. And if there's a young boy or girl out there living in an Orthodox home and who's struggling to come to terms with his or her sexuality, what advice would you give this child?
I would tell him or her that they have to stand strong to what they believe in, and no matter what the society says and no matter what the society is thinking they should be, they should just go for what they believe in, and also they should learn how to love themselves, like how RuPaul says, if you can't love yourself, how are you going to love somebody else? So that is what I preach as well. I keep telling people about that, and at the same time I want them to be courageous and be kind to each other.
Would you give the same piece of advice to a budding drag queen who's listening right now?
Oh yeah, yeah. I would definitely, and I definitely say, like, you know, I want you to be independent first, and then reach out to a mentor you think is would be your drag mother, and go from there. You know, because your journey is going to be very beautiful, and it's going to be like rainbow and unicorn.
Alex, once again, you're so brave. I cannot commend you enough for those titanium balls of yours, as you once described them on BuzzFeed. I wish I possessed half the guts, you know, you show to stand up for myself the way you do. And the next time I find myself pitying my condition or bitching about how it sucks to be me, despite all the privilege and the free passes that I've had in life, I'm going to remember you and check myself.
Definitely, just do that.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
And Alex, just before you leave, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
So they can get in touch with me through either in Facebook it's Maya the Drag Queen, in Instagram it's Maya the Drag Queen, or through email it's alexmathew88@gmail.com. You can reach out to me through any of these. So, yeah.
Okay, and Alex, just before we end, I just want to say your laugh is adorable. And
thank you so much for saying that.
I think I'll keep coming back to this interview just to hear your laugh.
Thank you so much for saying that.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you so much. And we hope that we'll get in touch with you soon when we have Chaya with Maya. And you did promise that Ankita and I will be on your show. So we're looking forward to that.
Definitely.
And thank you, dear listeners, for joining in on our conversation with Alex Matthew. We hope this conversation helps you and your friends understand the basics of gender and diversity.
And while you're on social media following Alex, do check us out at Desi Outsiders. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Desi Outsiders. And you can also drop us a mail with your thoughts, feedback or questions to mail@desioutsiders.com. Please rate and review The Desi Outsiders podcast on iTunes and tell all your friends about us. Pretty please.
And until next week with another interesting conversation, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And we are The Desi Outsiders.